Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, May 18th, 2016, and this is episode 105 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host tonight, or this afternoon, actually, Chad King, and I'm joined again by Eric Nathanson. Eric, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's closer to night over here. I mean, it's almost 5 o'clock. It's almost time to pour a drink. So you know, I'll be the host tonight. You be the host this afternoon.
There you go. It's early bird time.
Yeah.
Do you do that stuff? Do you go to early bird dinners at your
no,
elderly
I don't.
Age? No,
no. I tend to eat my first meal doesn't get eaten until mid afternoon.
Oh wow!
I have to drink a lot of coffee to wake up in the morning. You know, kind of read through the baseball news of the day, stuff like that. That's funny.
Sure.
That's how I wake up. Yep.
Yeah.
Drink some coffee. That's what it's like today. Got coffee going while we're talking, and I'm watching Red Sox Royals here.
Good. Yeah, I got a little bit of water here, got the kids at home, had a good day. So speaking of good days, the Giants have definitely been experiencing that lately. As we record right now, they've won 6 in a row, longest streak in the majors. So, shit, we'll take this.
It's a season long for them, too. They hadn't won more than, I think, 3 straight all season until this.
Yeah, primarily because of Kane and Peavy, and we'll get to them in a second. But, you know, they're now up in the standings by, what, a game and a half now? I believe.
Game and a half. It's a game and a half over Colorado, who's on a 5-game winning streak.
They've won 5 in a row. I know. Colorado. What the hell? Stop it, right. Rockies. We don't want to think about you. You know? We always think about the Dodgers and, you know, maybe one other team, but not the Rockies. That's unusual. But it's May. If you look at some of the years past, I kind of looked at it, and the Rockies have been in contention in May and June before. So it happens, but I'm sure they're going to fade with time.
Well, Rocky's going to Rocky. They got no pitching.
They're going to run into, you know, a few games where the pitching actually is pretty decent and their hitting is always good. So, yeah, they're going to run into these winning streaks, but they also run into horrible losing streaks as well. They're probably way more inconsistent than any other team in the NL West.
The Dodgers are right there with them, though. They're also a game and a half back, and they've kind of been steady doing the same stuff as the Giants lately.
Yeah, no, I mean, everybody was pretty much equal up until this last week when the Giants have gone on the 6-game winning streak. And now it's been fantastic. You know, they started the streak. Everything looked pretty bleak. After a couple of series, they almost got swept by Toronto, but did pull out that last game, which started their winning streak. And then, of course, the big sweep down in Arizona. That's the meat of this winning streak. And it felt so good. It felt like the universe balanced itself. Because, of course, Arizona came in and swept 4 from San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. So this was retribution in its finest form. They couldn't have done any worse down there. They almost did lose that last game. But, of course, that phantom double play there. Well, it wasn't a phantom double play, but, you know.
No, it was
totally legit. But, you know, in this day and age now, this year, we have replay and the second base slide rule and all these other things going on. So there is no phantom tag or swipe tag or anything like that. I mean, you have to physically be on the base at all times. You cannot slide outside of the base. You have to do all of these things exactly as prescribed in the rule book. And that's what's going on right now. But the Giants did challenge the safe call at first base. The umpire said that Brandon Belt had come off the bag. But as it turns out in the replay, he was just lunging for that scoop. Nice scoop, by the way. Man, is he playing good gold glove defense right now. As it turns out, he had the ball in his glove as he was still pushing off the bag. So he still had contact for a split second there. And the replay did show that pretty clearly. So it was overturned.
I bet he felt that too, because you kind of know if you have it that, like, one instance right before you do separate, you kind of know if you had it in there. And like, you know, real time back in the ball fields we've played on, you can't replay it.
No.
But now that it's 2016 and the Giants can, it was like, let's wait 4 minutes. And it was funny, John and Dave on the radio, they were like, there's three different things that can be challenged on replay here. You know, Bochy's got to be very specific what he's asking about, because mm-hmm. they thought that the Diamondbacks might challenge the slide at second, or the contact with the bag at second.
Yeah, by Crawford.
Mm-hmm. Right, and things like that. And it just turned out, because they said the umpires went over and talked to them, even after he like faked them out and he made the wrong sign and then called them out.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't watching it live, but I saw the replay and saw the umpire do the Steve Harvey thing, you know? It's like, the Miss Universe is, oops, sorry. Yeah, no, that was pretty funny. But
it was really an impressive weekend against Arizona, because they looked like the Giants that we know.
Yes.
They really did. They had timely hitting, panic, swinging 3-0 to hit that bomb. Posey coming through, what was that, in the ninth inning on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Connor Gillespie coming through in the ninth inning on Saturday, I believe it was. Getting a leadoff base hit to get the line moving, to get the Giants winning that game.
Yeah.
It seemed like everybody's pitching in at different spots of the lineup, and they did it the way we know how they do it. And pitching's been at the like crux of it. That's why they've been able to just get the timely hitting, because they've been able to pick and choose when to hit the ball.
Yeah, I believe they have a 1.86 staff ERA over the six-game winning streak. They're only hitting .254, but they've hit 4 or 5 home runs, and they've gotten a lot of hits with runners in scoring position, and I think that's the key. The pitching is number one. When you allow less than 2 runs a game, you give yourself a good chance to score. In fact, they've only scored 4.0 runs per game over the six-game winning streak. So that doesn't sound like a lot, and it's not a lot. You know, you'd expect 5, 6, 7 runs during a streak like this. But it is their pitching that has definitely kept them in the ballgame and allowed them to win these 6 in a row.
It's funny. Here's a fun stat that I found. The 4-game sweep where they scored 14 runs in the 4-game sweep over Arizona.
Yeah, so less than 4. Yeah.
Right. That was the fewest runs they've scored in a 4-game sweep of another team since 1910, when they scored 13 runs in a 4-game sweep.
Yeah, yes. I mean, that's when you're scoring fewer than four runs per game over 4 games. I mean, yeah, you don't think you're going to win all 4, but yeah. Their pitching back is absolutely then, dominant.
Yeah, Christy Mathewson had his hand in one of the wins back then. it's funny, because the whole staff's doing it. It's not just, you know, it's not just finally bum. It's not the top 3 anymore.
No, so we got to talk about PV and Kane. I mean, Kane's had 2 solid starts in a row, and PV finally had a good start too. He had one earlier in the year, but he's been getting blown up. So it's always been the back end of the rotation that stops these, you know, 2 or 3 game winning streaks. The top 3 have obviously been fantastic, well over 500, more than 10 games over 500. It's been the back end that's been so atrocious. But Kane now has only allowed, 3 earned runs in his last 15 innings pitched, and yet he still doesn't have a win to show for it.
No, and he went 8, and then he went 7.
Yep.
He it's funny, he only walked 2 guys over those 15 innings.
And that was the other thing that's so good about it. You know, his ERA was almost 9, and now it's all the way down to 5.87, which, it's not good, but it's May. And at this point last year, I don't have the stats up with me right now, I think he had a 5.79 ERA when he went on the shelf last year. And everybody was concerned about him at the time. But, you know, one more start, he's hopefully going to be below that last year. And I think he's 13 innings less pitched than last year. I think he has like 47, 48 innings right now. And he had 60 last year before he went on the shelf. So, hopefully he's going to be below that.
Right. It all depends on what you're looking for from Matt Cain. I mean, we're not looking him to be 1 or 2 right now. We're looking for him to be a decent 5, maybe a 4 if you know, things work out that way. You just want him to be solid enough in the back end of the rotation to keep them in it. And he's like progressing to that point. Maybe he's going to turn into Cain dominant again. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any of us really expects that. He had that 4-year stretch from 2009 to 2012. Which he had a below a 3 ERA, and was just that was vintage Kane. That's where his career has been solidified, and that's what we all know him as. Sadly, though, because of the old adage of getting caned, he really doesn't get that much run support. So even though he has a 3.53 ERA for his career, which is not that bad for a career, he is now, I believe, 7 games under 500. I believe. He's like 98 and 104. So I think he started this year. Maybe he's 97 and 104. But he started this year, I think, 97 and 99. And now he's 0-5 this year. So he's just, you know, it's going to take him a little while to get to win number 100. And he just may be that pitcher that, you know, ends a career very solidly and just never, he's just not going to be above 500. And that just shows you how crappy that stat is. You know, you have, I don't have the list here. I could look it up, but you have some guys who have pitched on very offensively dominant teams who finish their career with 4.0, 4.5 career ERAs, and they have a winning record. So you know, it is what it is. And so he pitched very well the last two starts, didn't get the win. And that's just getting Kane. That's what he's used to, but he doesn't care. He's fine. It's water off a duck's back. He just wants to contribute to this team. And if he can keep them in the game, keep them tied, keep them one, you know, within one run, he's done his job.
It's like he's back to being a leader when he's out there. Like, the club feels different again. You know what I mean? Like, back in the day when Kane would be on the mound, it's like, all right, everything's good. And it seems like just the defense has a rhythm behind him. He tries to stay in a rhythm. And his movement, he still has his stuff. It's just every now and then his location. And that's how it looks. He could jump back into it. I mean, aside from that, though, Bum last night, he threw a complete game. He almost threw a shutout. Yeah. If it wasn't for Matt Kemp deciding that he was determined to swing the bat against Bumgarner, he might have had that shutout.
Yeah, Mad Bum, he struck out at 11 last night. And so that was his, I believe, his 26th or 27th career game with 10 or more strikeouts, which pales in comparison to someone who we're going to talk about later.
Yeah. Which, I couldn't believe that, though.
I forgot about that stat. I know. Yeah, I totally forgot really about that. So I was like, wow.
Yeah, I'm like, incredible. Christy Mathewson, I get, but wow.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll get to that in a bit. But now he was absolutely dominant last night. Zero walks. 108 pitches, I think, he finished the game. And yeah, it was one mistake to Matt Kemp. But you know what? He came up earlier in the sixth with two men on, and he got him.
Yeah.
So to fly out, I believe, to Brandon Belt. I think that was that nice catch.
Yeah, that was the running catch.
Which was great because, you know, that was a critical situation in which it was only a 3-0 game at the time.
Myers had just put together a really good at-bat to drive that ball to the left field gap, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he fouled off. He spoiled a couple. Myers is good at that. He's very patient, and he can foul off pitches. And he did it against Bum because that's what you have to do. I thought they were going to score there, and once he got through that, I was like, he's going the whole way.
Yeah, and you have Brandon Crawford. He's just one of those guys who, you know, the way things are going, he might be the starting shortstop for the All-Star team this year. He's gotten to that point in his career where he is much better known than he was early in his career. His offensive statistics are pretty decent. His defense is outstanding. He won the Gold Glove last year. And, you know, Simmons is out of the National League. We're gonna see what happens here. But I think right now he deserves a nod for the All-Star team, even as a reserve. But he drove in all the runs last night.
That was so cool.
3-run bomb, a sac fly, and then a double. So he's been nails right now. And this is what you like to see, like Joe Panik hitting the 3-run home run on a 3-0 count. And last night he hit his 3-run home run on a 3-0 count. And the thing wasn't even a strike. The pitch wasn't even a strike. It was just outside. It was just up. But he was talking about, by the way, the post-game
interview.
He was
able to keep his hands. Yep.
You know, he just said he was looking for his pitch. He got it, and he whacked it out. Now, I don't think he was looking for it up in the zone, but I do think clearly, you know, 3-0, you're looking for a fastball. And it was up at his eyes, and, you know, he launched it out for the 3-run jack. So it's kind of cool to see some of the guys you don't expect to be swinging 3-0. And he said it is a sign from Bochy down to Bam Bam.
Kelly.
I'm sorry, not Bam Bam. Oh. To Kelly. Sorry, yeah. To Kelly at third base. And it's a sign for the take, which is totally understandable. And there was no take sign. So when there is no take sign, it's their choice. If they think they're going to get the pitch that they like and it's in their zone, go ahead. Go ahead and do it because, yeah, you could get out, but most likely you're going to swing and foul it off or swing and miss. So it worked out well.
Well, it's nice for them because the Giants are a ball club where pretty much guys, they know their jobs. They're never playing scared. So they know that if they do swing at that 3-0 pitch and happen to pop it up, it's not like Bochy's going to give away the privilege or something like that. No. I mean, every guy you look a diamond is pretty established. There's no platoon anywhere. There's no young, you know, guys fighting for at bats that have been thrown in there like Jarrett Parker or anybody. Nobody like that's in the lineup, and it's really nice, which is I think why this winning streak's just been kind of it's been good, but it's been kind of like ho hum. They're just doing it the Giants way. It's the old professionalism in them. They all just kind of they know their roles.
No, it's been great,
and that's why the three yeah.
Did you see that picture that Buster Posey posted? Well, maybe his team posted on his Instagram account?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes, did you see Jen Cosgrove? She zoomed in. She right when the picture came out, she did the, you know, three pictures where it's the full picture. Then you zoom in, and then you zoom in a little. Belt. Mm-hmm. Right, and Belt and that giraffe, they were chummy. He was totally, like, trying to push him away. Like, the giraffe was like, where are you going, my brother? What's going on?
That was the first thing I noticed. You know, it was like the picture came up, and I was like, oh, Buster Posey's in the front. And, oh, my God, the giraffe is licking Brandon Belt. It was fantastic. And it's like, look, you can't train a giraffe to do that. Now, Brandon Crawford did say in his interview last night, the post-game interview, that he did have a treat in his hand. So it's very possible the giraffe was leading for the treat. But regardless, Brandon Belt wasn't giving the damn giraffe the treat. He was holding it in his right hand.
Nope.
And the giraffe is leaning over, licking his hair.
Johnny Cueto's got his Instagram always fired up. Well, he just put out a picture of him getting kissed by a dolphin.
Oh, you serious? No,
a couple hours ago on Instagram. Yes.
All right.
Yeah, if you go one of these is going
to be the post picture for today.
you should absolutely go with the zoo because Buster's in the squat while Brandon Belt's hanging out with his brother giraffe.
Oh, man, that was fantastic. You know what is really cool about this? I mean, some of these guys go off on their own. And on their off days and do certain things. They, you know, go to the opera, they go to the zoo, they go to the aquarium, they go play some golf, they do whatever. They go out to dinner with their family. Like half the team went to the zoo together. I mean, how awesome is that? I mean, that speaks volumes to the camaraderie that this team has right now. I mean, how many teams, other than maybe the Cubs and a couple others, have exhibited this kind of brotherhood? I mean, it was just fantastic to see them and their families. I mean, you had, you know, who else was there? You had Panic. You had, not Contos, sorry. You had Duffy there. You had Strickland there. You had, you know, Posey. You had Belt. You had, you know, at least five other guys. It was a good half the team, you know, and a girlfriend or their wife or, you know, and their kid and everything like that. So it was great.
There might have even been more that we don't. Yeah, there might have been more. We don't know about it, you know.
Yeah,
I mean?
No. If the Monterey Bay Aquarium was closer to San Francisco, I'd invite them down here for a whole team thing. But I don't think that's going to happen. The zoo is much closer to Petco than the aquarium is to AT&T. But it was really cool to see them spend their off day together because they're with each other the whole goddamn year, and they're like, "Hey, you want to go to the zoo together?" You know, a lot of teams that don't like each other or don't get along very well, that's the last thing they want to do. They want to have a day by themselves, a day with their wife, a day with their family, a day just to relax and get away. Yeah, they relaxed, they got away, but they still stayed together. And that was, you know, I think that just speaks volumes to their brotherhood.
It was their third day off. They had played 6 weeks of baseball and only gotten 2 days off that whole time, too. So think about that. They were already exhausted of each other, but they did. They're like, yeah, let's all go together. We're here in San Diego. Must have been a planned thing ahead of time, but, you know, it really was. The Giants had played a lot of baseball. Compared to the other teams, the Giants have played, like, a few more games than a few of the teams out there.
I think only three other teams have played 40 games like the Giants have. Most teams have played around 36, 37. So I was noticing that in the standings last night. That's absolutely correct. The Giants have absolutely played the most games in the major league so far. So, yeah, I'm assuming without looking at the schedule that they're going to have more off days built in than other teams in the back end of the season.
Oh, yeah. June is good to them, and August is pretty good. They get some space in August.
Yeah,
they
great.
Actually get off before a 10, and then a day off after the 10-game homestand.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I always find nice. Interesting about Bochy, not all teams do this, of course. It is actually fairly rare. But when you do have off days, Bochy doesn't skip a guy in the rotation. He never does. And playoffs, different situation, but or maybe even down the stretch, he's done it before when they're fighting for a playoff spot. But this time of the year, They don't do that. Now, of course, they wouldn't have skipped a guy this time because Bumgarner led off the first game of the series. But whenever they do have off days, you know, if it's like heading into Peavy, let's say, I know that happened earlier this year, they could have skipped him and went right to Kane, and, you know, you get everybody shuffling up one spot. So theoretically, you're going to get, you know, more starts for the top three over the entire duration of the year. If you do this three times, those guys are going to get one extra start. But that's usually not the way that Bochy operates. And I think that's because, you know, number one, he wants to get those guys their reps, right? He doesn't want them to take 10 or 11 days off between starts, which makes sense. And two, his confidence in them. So I think that also helps the morale of the team. I know a lot of people, a lot of fans don't like that. They're like, no. You got to give the top three the as many starts as possible. But yeah, you also don't want to burn them out either. You know, an extra six, seven innings over the year, if you do make the playoffs, could hurt them in the long run. You never know. It depends. There's a lot of gray area there, but it's just interesting.
You know, it's funny because this is what makes the fact that the back end's doing so well at this point, and that the Giants, there was rumblings and mumblings a few weeks ago when Kane and Peavy were both struggling that the Giants might have to be in the market for another starting pitcher.
Right.
And most of Giants fandom was like leaning one way, and that's just not going to happen now. Everybody was looking and saying, oh, Tim Lincecum's having his showcase. Maybe he can sign. But at long last, it proves he's not going to be back with the Giants this year. He's going to the Angels. Yeah. How do you feel about that? Is it weird? Is it going to be weird to see him in the uniform? Is it weird because it's the Angels or just a different uniform?
Yeah, you know, it's. I'm fine with it. I really am. Totally fine with it. Number one, he's not in the National League. Okay, he's not with the Padres or the Dodgers or other, you know, rumored teams. I don't think there was necessarily room for him with the Giants. I wouldn't have said it would have been a bad move if they signed him to be, you know, a mid-inning reliever, because that's where I do think that his career is heading towards. Now, granted, if Peavy continues on the same track, I may change my mind, because, you know, Lincecum even last year had a 4.13 ERA, right? So, I mean, it wasn't atrocious. It wasn't Tim Lincecum from 2010, but it's not atrocious. I mean, it's much better than where Kane and Peavy are right now. But that said, I do think that the Giants have an opportunity for next year. He's going to sign, or he did sign with the Angels. We're going to see how he does this year. And this is going to be really, really interesting. Now, if he has a spectacular year, you're going to have a lot of teams that are going to be all over him. But if he has a mediocre to bad year, not too many teams are going to be interested in him in 2017. Peavy's going to be off the books next year. So yeah. I think there is a possibility that they may sign him to a minimal deal or something fairly low and invite him to camp and just kind of see how he does. And he prefers San Francisco. He really wanted to be here with the Giants, but he also did not want to come out of the pen. He wanted to start. And the Angels have been decimated by injuries.
Yeah, he's adamant about that.
Just absolutely destroyed by injuries. And so, you know, they're bringing up triple A's and double A's. I mean, at this point, I think it's a good move by the Angels. He stays on the West Coast where he wanted to be. He's not in the National League. So, you know, I think it's a great move for Tim Lincecum. And it's not going to affect the Giants in any way. And in fact, it may prove to be some sort of scouting, you know, long scouting report, I guess, for the Giants next year if they feel like they need to sign him next year.
We need secret agent Timmy to go down there and get in Mike Trout's ear and talk to him about how great it is to play in San Francisco and how it'd go down as a legend winning multiple championships. We need to activate secret agent Tim Lincecum so Mike Trout will be back here in a few years.
Wouldn't that be something?
Holy I still hate – that'd be so great. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's funny because I think that the Giants left field help and I hadn't really talked about it, but I thought I might go after somebody, but that's like not even the point. But with Timmy, I still hate the Angels. I'll always hate the Angels.
Me too.
2002, well, I mean, that specific, you know, will never, that feeling will never leave me.
No.
But like, I'll tune in. My MLB.TV will be fired up when he's throwing his first pitch in an Angels uniform. Even if there's a Giants game on the other channel, I'm going to watch Timmy. you know, for the first inning at least before double screening. I'll probably double screen. But, you know, I hope it does it. I hope he shows his stuff, and maybe he could be that fourth or fifth starter for a few more years up here.
You know, it's really weird because you and I have been Giants fans for, you know, all of our memorable lives. And it doesn't seem that long ago. It really does seem like just a few years ago. But I remember specifically, you know, I was living here in Gilroy, 2007, this young phenom that we've been hearing about for the last year or two, Tim Lincecum, was making his major league debut in late 2007.
Yeah, May 2007, yeah.
Was it May?
Yeah, it was May. It was a Sunday.
It was later than that.
It was May. It was a Sunday night game against the Phillies in Philadelphia.
So that Sunday night game, I went to our local bar, the Clotta here, Irish pub. And I remember sitting, I just told my wife, I was like, this is like the next coming. You know, everybody is preaching that he's the next Roger Clemens. He's coming into the Giants. He's going to own the Giants for the next 10 years. And, you know, sitting down and watching him with a couple of beers, hitting 97, 98 miles an hour and just mowing people down. I just remember that feeling. He's the only pitcher since I've been a Giants fan that has made their major league debut to me with such emphasis and excitement and anticipation and lived up to it.
Yes.
Than any other one I can remember. And not only that, of course, we all know what he's done, helping to win 3 World Series championships and winning 2 Cy Youngs and pitching 2 no-hitters. And one of the things we were talking about earlier, you know, that was Mad Bum's 27th game with 10 or more strikeouts. I was like, wow, that's a lot. Tim Lincecum has 36. Or is it 37? Anyway, it's 36 or 37. Sorry, I might be off by one.
It's the most in the
Giants history. And he did this in a short 9 years. And I say short 9 years because that's what it feels like. I look back at that and I'm like, holy shit, that's 9 years. It feels like 5 or something.
He didn't start for the full 9 years. The round starting in 2012, he started bouncing all inside the, you know, bullpen rotation inside the organization.
It's exactly right. He didn't even start the entire time. He was, you know, he's been off the books for a little bit, but you know, 36 or 37 games with 10 or more strikeouts is absolutely incredible. Of course, you have guys like Max Scherzer. I think he's at 11 straight games with 10 or more strikeouts, which is – that's stupid, silly, crazy. I mean, that's already –
Oh, Kershaw is silly, stupid, crazy right now.
Yeah, he's at got the same thing. He's like at 12 or something.
Well, he's got 6 straight games with 10 or more Ks and 1 or less walks.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And he's only got 2 walks during that whole time.
Yeah.
And he's been striking out over 10. Kershaw's been on fire lately.
No, he is. You know, look, they don't have Greinke, and even if they did, he may not be as good because look what he's doing this year. But even the Giants beat Greinke for the first time ever. Hey, we forgot to mention that.
That was a great one. That was a very interesting night. That was the night Casilla got pissed at Bochy as he yanked him.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. That's right.
No, yeah, that was a hot-button issue, but it was like almost a full week ago at this point because it was at the beginning of the streak. It was game one of the Arizona series.
You know, it's been smoothed over. I think everything's fine. He was just heat of the moment. You know, he's like, I'm the closer. Yeah, I loaded the bases, but you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, I loaded the bases. But it was also against Jake Lamb, who ended a game earlier this year, who beat Casilla on it wasn't a walk-off, but it was a game-winning home run.
Well, I defended Casilla. I really did. And it was funny because I was only listening because I was on vacation during this time, and I was just sitting outside listening to the game. And I defended Casilla because I actually think Casilla pitched around Goldschmidt.
Oh, I think he did too. I agree with that. Yes.
And I think that in his mind, look, I'm the closer. It's my job to get these 3 outs. It's not necessarily my job to get this guy as the 3rd out. It's my job to get 3 outs. So when Bochy comes out and yanks him after that, it's like, what the heck? You didn't give me a chance to do my job. And right. I totally get why he was pissed, you know, an hour later because he some post-game comments, you know, through the translator. He's like, I'll still come back. I'll do my job, da-da-da-da, because it's Casilla. Casilla's a loyal soldier. He'll do his job, but I totally get why he's pissed because it was a vote of no confidence from Bochy.
I agree with that, and it was actually fairly it all worked out in the end, and everything smoothed over, and they got the win, and everybody's fine, and kissing
and they're on
other.
The winning streak. Woo-hoo.
Exactly, so everything's fine. There's going to be no repercussions from this now, but it was dangerous because not only you take Casilla out, so that causes strife from your closer. And who knows where that's going to end up? You just don't know. No. Second, it would have been so much worse if Lopez walked him, allowed a hit, hit him, whatever, right? Threw a wild pitch, something that would have lost the game. That would have been so much worse. So Bochy really took a chance. And the only reason I say that is because if he left Casilla in and Casilla blew the game, everybody would be on Casilla. No one, very few people, I should say, would be on Bochy, right? But the fact that he put Lopez in, because Lopez has had some, you know, he's solid now. He's calmed down. But he started the year really erratic, really erratic. And if he had blown that game, it would have been like, okay, now you take out your closer and you put in a guy who blew the game anyway. It's like a double whammy.
That's why that night
so it's dangerous to do that.
Yeah, I was defending Casilla on Twitter, and it was because I was saying that at that point I didn't give a shit about whether or not the Giants won that game. There were far-reaching ramifications with your closer being yanked from a game in the ninth inning that he hadn't even surrendered a run during. Yeah. I mean, it's not like he had a 3-run lead and he'd given up two of the runs and loaded the bases.
It's different than like let's say what you said there. He had a 3-run lead and gave up a couple runs and loaded the bases, or he had a 4-run lead. A reliever was in, got a couple guys on. He brought in Casilla. Casilla allowed a couple of runs. Same thing.
Right.
That would have been a little bit different, but you're right. He put three people on, but he had also gotten two out, and he hadn't allowed a run yet. So, you know, Bochy was playing partly the matchup. Yeah. But,
it was a Casilla, ballsy move. Right. Very ballsy.
Yeah, it was very ballsy. And I was going to say, I mean, again, it really could have blown up in Bochy's face. I mean, it turned out fine. We don't know what would have happened if Casilla had pitched a lamb, but my God, that could have really turned sour. As it turns out, it was just a 24-hour period. It was a new cycle of Bochy's, you know, and Casilla's pissed, and, well, okay, we're all good. Because he came right out the next night. He put him right back out there, and he got the save. Yep. So, you know, reinstituted his confidence. No problems, no worries. He did apologize later. He had those post-game comments, which weren't, you know, they were a little inflammatory. But the next day, he was like, I understand why he made the decision. Even if he doesn't believe that, he's saying the company line. He calmed down to the point where he's like, okay, I got to get my paycheck here. I don't rock the boat. So both guys, you know, did their job. So it's all good now.
It's a testament to Bochy. It really is.
No, it really is. That's fantastic. Well,
let's see. You do want to bring up the Odor Bautista fight?
I just wanted to bring that up just because it's unusual. It's something that, you know, we have baseball brawls every year, and there's always a certain thing. But this is a brawl that was instigated. I mean, let's all be honest. It definitely had hauntings of what Bautista did last year. Everybody was waiting for the retribution from the bat flip from last year's playoff series. You know,
bat flip.
And we talked about it last year. I mean, look, I had no problem with the bat flip. Do I think it's cocky and all that stuff? Yeah, of course. But in that context of a walk-off home run to win a postseason series, if a bat flip is not good for any other situation, it's good for that situation, okay? Not to win a regular season game, not to hit in the fifth inning, but to win a freaking postseason series, I'm sorry, it's totally legitimate, right? Or not, sorry, it wasn't to win the series, that's right. Yeah, it was just to win
the
game.
No, it was the seventh inning, I think.
That's right. Sorry about that. I'm totally ahead of myself
here. No, it was the game that won the series, but it was after the wacky top half of the inning where Odor was actually in the middle of stuff.
Yeah,
and
he ran to first
because the ball. Right, and then they came back, and Bautista did that, and he did the bat flip. My thought has always been, you don't want him to flip his bat, don't give up the home run. You know, don't want him to dance in the end zone, don't let him score the touchdown.
I had no problems with Bautista doing it, but you know, I think everybody was talking about that. You know, it was leading up to this series.
Yeah, and Bautista, he did go in, but he went straight at the bag. He did the quote unquote new textbook slide. It was just a late slide, and so Odor had the chance. But, I mean, it's like Odor instigated. I haven't seen a guy go off like that in a while, and he connected solidly.
The punch was a thing of beauty, to be honest. It was pretty fantastic. And even Bautista in his post-game comments said, yeah, he got me good. Like
they
he
did.
He said he, you know, he deserves props for that. But, and you know, he went off on some other stuff. So Odor, you know, he said, look, I don't regret the bunch. I know I'm going to get suspended. And he was. He was suspended 8 games, which is like the longest suspension for a brawl in MLB history. You know,
well, he must be appealing it because he just made a nice play on a pop-up. So.
No. He's appealing it. But he fully expected to be, you know, that's just the normal thing. You always appeal it, right? Because it might get short.
He's the only one that got that.
Something.
Yep. He's the only one that got that long. Everybody else was like, Bautista was one. Mm-hmm. Even the Cubs broadcast was talking about it yesterday. They're like, I don't know why Bautista even got suspended. I kind of agree. He didn't really get a chance to throw a punch.
Yeah, no, I almost think it was like MLB just saying, look, we have to suspend this guy a game just because. You know what I mean? Because he was kind of the target. Everyone assumed that he was going to be the target. He was thrown out earlier. The slide was questionable, very questionable, in terms of, you know, the new rules and everything like that. Let's be honest. If he had not slid like he did, the punch wouldn't have happened. So I do think there is some attribution to his, you know, there's some culpability to his actions. So I agree with the 1 game suspension. But, you know, look. Odor got 8, so, you know, he's going to serve it. He doesn't regret the punch. It's all good. It was fun to watch anyway.
It was the best punch since Michael Barrett hit AJ Pierzynski 10 years ago on Friday.
Yes, I agree. I mean, you know, all these fights are like, you know, a little bitch slapping and air punches, and then everybody holds him back while they're not really trying to get to their target. You know what I mean? It's like, let me at him. I'm not really trying, but I'm trying to look like I am. You know, it's always
every
this
now
fake
and then
theater.
Yep, every now and then there's one like straight on. The guy gets to cock his fist, and it cuts through the masses. Get one of those.
Loved it. I mean, I love old school baseball. I love guys taking care of the game, even though how infantile and juvenile it can be at times. I do get that. I love it when the guys just take care of business out on the field. It's just like, you slid into me, F you, boom, knocked him cold. But to Bautista's credit, he took the punch, didn't go down, and later said, that was a hell of a punch. He got me good. Like, he wasn't like, oh, he was a pussy or something. He was like, yeah, he got me good. Hey, props to him. Good punch. I love that. I love that both sides were just like, whatever. It was like Mad Bum last night, you know? Myers had that little mini altercation where Bum thought that Myers was glaring at him after that strikeout, and then Bum goes straight at him, and bench is clear, everybody comes out.
Bum's such a red ass. He really is.
He is, and that was one of those situations where, like, he's had, you know, these same situations with Puig and all that, which I was like, yeah, you know, that I think he deserved that. I think Bum did what he needed to do. Last night was an overreaction, and I think it was apparent later in the game when he walked in the top of the ninth. He went down to Myers, who was playing first base, and you could see him basically apologizing to Will Myers. You know, Will Myers, you could lip read, he was saying, it's all right, it's all good, we're okay. So, you know, I do think that Mad Bum just like saw him glare his way for a split second and assumed he was, you know, trying to challenge him. And I don't think that was the case at all.
It wasn't. Myers said he was looking at the velocity on the pitch that he struck out on. And I got to be honest, Bum was just looking for an excuse to wind himself up a little bit.
Yep.
I think it kept his juices going for a while.
It didn't hurt him.
No, he seems to thrive off that kind of
stuff. He does. He thrives with adrenaline and pressure and the big spotlight and everything, yeah.
There was a kid, I don't know his name, and I don't have the box score open near me, and I'm not going to because it's not enough time. But there was a kid who made his major league debut last night for the Padres, and the first batter he faced was Buster Posey.
Yes.
And he got Buster to pop out on one pitch.
Mm-hmm.
In the top of the ninth, the first batter he faced was Madison Bumgarner. Somewhere along the way, he got scared of Bum because he threw three straight like in the ground and then still missed on the fourth.
Yep.
It was like he was scared to pitch to Bum, but Buster, he was like, ah, no big deal. I'll just get him to pop up.
Isn't that funny? I know, because he had electric stuff. He was hitting 96 on the gun.
Yeah.
Real tall guy. He was like 6'6", I believe, and thin as a beanpole. And he's been in the minors for 7 years. I forget his name. But, I was watching him a lot because he ended up giving up the 2-out hits that did score a run in the eighth. That was on Crawford's double where he was thrown out at third. He was a Pence single with a shift over to the left. So he got that out, or that single, and then, of course, Crawford hit the double to knock him in. But you're right, in the top of the ninth, Bum was leading off because he was going to go for the CG. And yeah, four straight balls. They were just laughing
like
at it.
He was scared of him. It was so funny.
They're like, someone talked to this guy about Mad Bum. I know he's only hitting 130, but.
I saw it on the first pitch. The first pitch was like a 50 footer. And I'm like, Nothing was close.
Yeah, it was pretty fun to see this guy have mad respect for Mad Bum. So, I mean, you know, he ended up not giving up a run in the ninth, but, you know, good for him.
Yeah, I found that to be hilarious from last night.
So injuries real quick. I know that Contos was activated, so he's back on the roster. I haven't checked on Romo. I know he's still out right now. Last report I had, he was out for another week or two.
Yeah, he threw some I want to say extended spring training innings or inning, something like 15, 20 pitches in some extended spring training minor league game or something. I didn't have any stats. I just saw that as a throwaway comment, I think, on somebody's yesterday. So he's starting to throw at least.
All right. Well, good, because we need those guys back. Because I know the bullpen, the entire staff has been great the last seven games. But, you know, we
need
some of
those. The last 11 games.
Well, that's right. What were the stats that you had for the last 11
Well, it's funny. They remember they got their ass kicked by the Rockies 17-7. And that was like the second time in a week that they gave up 12 or more runs in an inning.
Right.
And, you know, we were all like, you know, woe is me. What the crap? You know, what's going on, Peavy? What's going on, Kane? You know, because they were the two guys that were in the middle of those innings. And since then, the Giants are 8-3, you know, as part of the six game winning streak is part of being 8-3 in those 11 games. And the whole staff, not just the starters, has a 2.02 ERA.
Yeah, that's pretty
They've given up 24 earned runs in 107 innings, 26 runs, period. 24, you know, of the earned variety. And their walks, their whip is 1.15. They've struck out 95 guys and allowed 95 hits.
Oops, sorry about that.
They're not walking people. 28 walks. 7 of those walks are from Peavy. Peavy has 7 walks in his 11 innings. So that's part of it. And they've only given up 4 home runs. The pitching staff altogether, they just somehow seem locked in. And hopefully the Cubs won't take it out of them.
Now their ERA was actually really woeful, but the last week they've really ascended in the ranks. I think they're 11th or 12th in MLB, which really isn't too bad considering where they started from.
Yeah, I was looking at Baseball Reference today. They're the middle. They're right in the middle.
Okay.
They have a top, middle, and bottom of the rankings that they give you real quick, and the Giants have the middle ERA.
Okay. So not too bad considering if you throw out those three games where they've given up 9 runs or more in one inning in those games – their ERA is much, much better. So it's okay. I mean, those outliers are fine. If you're going to give up, you know, 3 games where you have one inning in each of those 3 games where you're giving up 9 or more, and that really inflates your ERA, that doesn't tell you the whole picture of how they are in terms of consistency, right? You don't want to see those 9, 10, 11, 12 runs in those 3 innings spread out over a period of a couple of weeks where it's more inconsistent across the staff. It's just those outliers. And if you take those outliers away, they're much, much better. So, you know, that I think that speaks volumes to how the Giants are doing. So coming up, we have 2 more. The Giants have 2 more against San Diego down there in the Southland. So we have Cueto going tonight and Samardzija going tomorrow. All 3 top number ones, top third of the rotation, are all under a 3.0 ERA. So I fully expect them to win at least one of these 2 games. And if they win both, they're going to have a perfect road record here, 8-0 heading back to home. So, you know, heading into the Cubs, that if that does happen, and then they have a bad series against the Cubs, at least it'll absorb some of that. So let's hope for that that result. And then, that's about it. Back into the rotation is going to be starting against the Cubs on Friday and Saturday, and then Bum's going to be on national television for Sunday Night Baseball.
I mentioned this to you earlier. In all the media stuff I've looked through, on the At-Bat app, it still has a TBD. They haven't announced the starters for the weekend series for
true.
The Giants yet.
That's
usually,
an assumption,
right. Well, usually on the game notes, we'll get it. You know, we'll get the series they're currently in, and the next series will be listed under it, and they'll have the starters. Like, you know, tonight's Cueto Pomerantz tomorrow night is Samardzija Shields. And then usually under that, they'll list it, and they don't. So I'm starting to wonder, and this is just my conspiracy theory, and we don't have to dig deep into it or anything, but I'm wondering if Kane and Peavy aren't going to be flipped, and Kane might start Friday against Arrieta, and then Peavy will go Saturday against Leicester,
right.
And then it'll be Bum against Hendricks on Sunday.
I think that's really possible, to be honest. You know, but it's going to be probably the first question that they ask him at the conclusion of the Padres series, if they're going to be, you know, keeping their starters a secret here, because I'm sure you're not the only one thinking about this.
Right. I have a feeling that it'll leak out. You know, like I do, when Bosch does his dugout interview and everybody's gathered around, that's when that stuff kind of filters out.
Yeah.
And things like that. So I think it'll happen either today or tomorrow where they'll set it, where he'll make a statement, because somebody like, you know, Hank Pavs or Bags, they got to ask.
Yeah, no, definitely. All right, well, it's going to be interesting. Hopefully they can sweep the – in fact, they're 4-0 against the Padres this year so far. So they have a shot at going 6-0 against them this year, which is the team that you're supposed to beat up on, right? I mean, you're not supposed to lose to these guys, at least not more than a couple of – couple of games out of five or six, so
especially not at AT&T South.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my God, every time the Giants scored a run, there was more cheers than when the Padres
It was loud last night.
No, it was very loud. It's a fun park to be in too. I've watched a few games in there. It's a very nice park, and there really are a crap ton of Giants fans. So in fact, I wish I was there tonight, because it would definitely be a lot of fun. Definitely could get a good seat, because it's not filled up like AT&T. One of these days I'll make it back down there, maybe in the press box. That'd be kind of cool. But So I think that's going to do it for episode 105. You can follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can like us on Facebook. And we also have a YouTube channel that you can check out. Ben and Willie were not with us today, but you can follow Ben at Fried Duck. You can follow Willie at Willie Dills. You can follow Eric at Two Hot Hits. That's with the number two, and myself at ChadK21. Have I missed anything, Eric, other than your websites and Friday Five?
I'll be back with the Friday Five on Friday. I was on vacation last week. I was at Disney World and had some other stuff crop up the week before, but I'll be back, especially since it's Cubs Giants. And anybody who's ever followed or listened or read anything I write know, since I'm from Chicago, Cubs Giants series, they get my blood going, especially because I live in a split household. I'm Giants, she's Cubs. I watch all the Cubs games, so it's going to be an interesting weekend. So Friday Five will be back this week.
Sweet. All right, so that'll do it for episode 105 of the TorchCast. Join us next week for 106. Hopefully the Giants can complete this sweep, take maybe 2 out of 3 from Chicago, and stake their ground in solid first place. So for Eric Nathanson, I'm Chad King, signing you off. Adieu. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills, saying we'll see you next time.